Chapter 10. Ghosts of the Warp.
You know, as my gracious hosts, that my arm was restored between that day long ago and my captivity now. The changes wrought upon my flesh are visible as I stand here before you in this cell, shackled and blinded. My arm regrew, perhaps regenerated would be a fairer term, though it reformed in a far changed state than it had been before its loss. It was my first mutation, and far from my last. Ahriman's rubric banished mutation from the Thousand Suns, but only among those whom had little in the way of psychic talent, and only by destroying their physical forms. The rest of us are as prone to the warp's whims and our own sins as any other being dwelling inside the eye. If you believe my former brother Azek is entirely unchanged beneath his eye-touched armor, you are as dangerously naive as he was when he unmade our legion. Ahriman believes he is perfectly unaltered. Did you know that? Yet I have seen the void that screams where his face used to be. As we met with Daravek, I did my best to ignore the ache of loss and the maddening phantasm of pain in fingers I no longer possessed, silently reciting Prosperine focusing mantras. I can still feel my fingers, I said under my breath at one point. Iliaster began to quietly detail the physiological reasons for this.
Silence, fools, Telemachon murmured, still focused on Abaddon and Daravek.
I understood why Abaddon had chosen to only bring three of us, and I dare say it made a statement to Daravek regarding how little he intimidated us. But we were heavily outnumbered, thanks to my lord's posturing. I looked across the rank of warriors opposing us, recognizing a couple of them from old battles. I'd even served one of them, Ektral the Scaled, as a mercenary in the years before I wore the black. Whether these warriors comprised a new elite bodyguard for Daravek after Iliaster and I had butchered his former kindred, or whether they were a gathering of lesser commanders meant to impress us, I could not be certain. All I knew was that we could not kill them all. Had Moriana predicted the details of this meeting? Had she seen its outcome? As much as I wished to know, I did not dare to risk a telepathic pulse to Abaddon, lest Daravek hear our shared thoughts. It was galling enough, knowing he had the ability to read mine. The warp boiled in the night heavens above the broken dome. I heard its never-ending song louder here, as the essence of unreality whispered and sang to those who would be its champions. Abaddon and Daravek were nexuses for these half-seen, half-felt forces, though I could make out no real meaning in the voices calling to them. Not that voices is even an accurate word, given the primal forces sinking gentle claws into both warriors' souls. Such nebulous sound was merely how my two-mortal consciousness conceived of the powers at play. Watching the twisting sky put me in mind of Abaddon's confession after my return from Malium, when he'd informed the Ezekarian of the pressures grasping at his spirit. That, too, had been a matter for intelligences not limited by mortality. Abaddon had little in the way of answers himself, merely citing a compulsion, a physical and spiritual need, to reach back into real space and seek the source of the warp song he never stopped hearing.
I see a sword forged in a sunset, he had told us in a strained tone. I see a star dying, and its ash used to fuel the engines of a great throne of gold. I see the first murder, where brother kills brother, where the rage of the slayer and the agony of the slain becomes a tempest behind the veil.
He had spoken like this for some time. I did not mock him for such poesies. I did not laugh at them. I dreaded them. Never had I witnessed him so close to breaking apart. Seeing Abaddon murmur of his haunted dreams in a prophecy-soaked whisper was one of the most unnerving sights I have ever seen. His golden eyes glazed over with cataracts of distracted madness, as though someone or something had reached into his brain to puppeteer his fanged mouth to speak on its behalf. The warp promised him this unimaginable prize in a ceaseless song, and yet he had no way of knowing what this treasure truly was. Whatever it was, Its presence was a clarion call throughout the Empyrean's tides. It inhaled hope and exhaled promise.
"Oh, is it a demon?"
Lahior had asked, as awed and uneasy as the rest of us.
"How can you trust such an offer?"
"I don't need to trust it," Abaddon snapped back from his polluted reverie. "I need only to master it." "It will be yours," Morriana promised him. "From the moment you claim it until you wear the Emperor's crown upon your brow, it will be your companion and your weapon." Few of us were convinced. Amuriel spoke for us.
"For this," he said, "you would fight a war?"
"The war is sacrosanct," Abaddon replied, "and it is ours, not mine. We will return to the Imperium and bring fire to those deluded souls who fight beneath the false Emperor's banners. This is Vindicta. This is why we wear the black. Whatever else waits outside the Eye, I will kill or claim as the need arises."
We knew so little about Drak'nayen then. I think back to our ignorance in those nights with a sense of something akin to purity. For all the strength Abaddon's blade has granted to us down the centuries, and for all the victories reaped with its screaming edge, it remains a cancer threatening to blacken my brother's heart. I believe none of its whispers. None at all. Throughout the negotiations on Tial Shara, I layered my psychic resistances in the hope of defeating Daravek's casual rifling of my mind. All the while I watched for the ambush that seemed inevitable. Daravek had us where he wanted us. The idea he might not take this chance to kill Abaddon was laughable. Worse was the thought that he could make me turn on my lord, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. Yet, if it was within his power, why had he not already willed it to happen? There was no answer to this, at least none that I could see. His warriors' thoughts were calm and assured. They seemed certain of their dominance in the truce. They had come to make demands from what they perceived as a weaker foe, not to make an agreement with them. The negotiations themselves were torturous, as they so often are between the Eye's warbands. Our relative strengths only added to the difficulty in reaching a resolution. Both sides had no wish to leave their fleets alone for too long, lest conflict break out, according to some previously planned betrayal. We could not destroy their fleet without taking horrendous casualties, diminishing any hope of bleeding the Imperium, regardless of whether Sigismund's Black Templars waited for us or not. They could not face us without the risk of sustaining the same losses. The promise of mutually assured destruction had a way of calming even the fiercest hearts. Yet their demands rained upon us. Daravek wanted ships, warriors, and materiel in exchange for holding off from an attack. Again and again he made his smirking insistences, assured that Abaddon would capitulate to preserve the bulk of our fleet.
"I will give you nothing," Abaddon replied each time.
When he wearied of Daravek's perseverance, he looked longingly at the Talon. Its autoloaders cycled in clanking response to his fading patience.
"Shall I tell you what I believe, Tagus?"
Tagus was taller than Abaddon, a rare sight given that Abaddon was cast in Horus's image. The Lord of Hosts, swollen by his supplication to the powers, inclined his head in generous benediction, as if granting a favour to a particularly amusing servant. The three of us bristled at the insult, but Abaddon only smiled.
"Speak," Daravek intoned.
"I believe you are likewise trapped in the storm."
Abaddon was holding his anger back, binding it tight, showing it only in the flashing gold of his soul-stained eyes.
"I believe the warp aided your pursuit of us, then cut you adrift in our wake, leaving you becalmed and with no idea why. I believe that the malignant essences we call gods have brought us together here in the heart of this storm to play out a game of kings and pawns, just to decide where their favour should fall."
"You have an admirable imagination, son of Horus."
Abaddon refused to rise to the bait.
"I believe, most of all, that you are frightened of us."
He scraped the Talon's claws together. Several of Daravek's warriors brought their hands inching closer to their bolters. We held motionless in response, lest mirroring their gesture provoke them into breaking the truce.
"You fear us," Abaddon continued, "because despite your raving speeches that we are betraying the legions, and despite your petty crusades to destroy us, we not only survive, but thrive. We grow with every conflict. The icons of the failed legions are sheared from ever more suits of armor, and the colors of shame are eclipsed in numbers no other warband can match. You fear that we are right and that you are wrong. You fear us more than any other reason, because you had to chase us. Because we were here first. Because we are the ones on the verge of breaking free, despite all your attempts in these last decades to hinder us. We have been working towards this fate, while you have done nothing but seek to stop us. We've fought for true unity, all brothers beneath the black banner, while you fought against it in the guise of preserving the old failed ways. We, Tagus, have acted. You have reacted." Abaddon's gaze had roamed across the other legionaries as he spoke, and now it returned to Daravek. "And here we stand at our prison's edge. Even now you have no answers to give your men. Instead, you force this meeting with us, praying you can glean insight into our plans and scavenge victory through threats. You'll lose this war, Tagus. You'll lose because you desire the god's favor and you fear it falling upon anyone else."
Daravek opened his jaws. Black slime ran between the sewer grate of his teeth.
"You are not the only one to dream of the end of empires," he warned. "You are not the only one that hears Draknayen's call."
"No," Abaddon admitted. "But which one of us hears it louder? Who hears it clearer? The one seeking it, or the one chasing the seeker?"
Abaddon turned away before Daravek could reply, speaking as he walked back to us.
"If you're so certain of your strength, Tagus Daravek, come test it against my Black Legion now. The vengeful spirit hungers."
There should have been more. We all expected harsher words to follow and promises of recrimination. Such suspicions proved unfounded when in the very same moment three of Daravek's warriors held fingers to their vox speeds and Asher Kai's voice drifted through my mind.
"Secondor."
"Asher Kai," I sent back. "Do you remember Drolkir?"
"Of course I do."
"Did I face Daravek? Did he kill me?"
"Blood of the Pantheon, what foolishness is this?"
"Daravek implied that—"
"Don't be ludicrous," interrupted Asher Kai. "I must speak with Ezekiel, but his mind is walled too tight."
"What is amiss? Explain yourself." Across from us, Daravek was speaking with his men, and a sudden disquiet radiated from their auras.
"There are ships appearing before both fleets, unknown vessels of unknown allegiance, not sailing into the storm's heart, but simply manifesting before us."
"Daravek's men are uneasy," I observed. "It is not one of their ploys."
"I have no idea what it might be. We have been boarded."
"We...
what?"
In the same moment, Daravek aimed his axe at Abaddon.
"What treachery is this? You have broken the truce, Ezekiel!"
Abaddon rounded on his rival, eyes narrowed to platinum slits.
"We have broken nothing.
We have been boarded."
Asher Kai's silent sending was jagged with urgency.
"A single legionary. It defies explanation. Every ship in the fleet is reporting the same phenomenon. A lone warrior manifesting upon their command decks. They are not moving nor speaking. They merely stand there watching us."
I reached out to place a hand on Abaddon's shoulder and haul him back, only to see I had no hand with which to grip. It still lay on the wraithbone ground meters away.
"Brother,"
I said, "we must return to the vengeful spirit. Asher Kai reports that we have been boarded at—"
"You dare!"
Daravek was calling out to us.
"You dare board our ships?"
"Daravek's warships have been boarded as well," I sent back to Asher Kai. "He suspects us of breaking the truce." I looked between the two opposed, confused groups of warriors. One by one, they turned to stare across the dusty garden with its eroded statuary, where a lone warrior walked from the Eldar ruins. He was dead. I thought that at once, as easily as if I had seen decaying flesh or smelt the rotting musk of decomposition. To my sixth sense, he was without a soul, a man disconnected from the mechanisms of life. And yet he walked closer, his armour the light grey of an overcast sky, tinged by the faintest pale green, his eye lenses red-lit from within. He was no demon. Demons have no souls, yet they are presences in the warp. They are the warp itself, and form writhing, drifting things before my psychic gaze. Yet he was no human. Humans have shining souls, and they are beacons in the warp's tumultuous night. Whatever this warrior was, he walked the line between mortal and immortal, fused with the warp, yet not born from it, saturated by the immaterium, yet not possessed by it. He had a soul, I saw as he drew near, and it was still his own, a weak thing, a dim and shredded light. There was a beauty in that, in the same way a lesser mind, reliant on the five mundane senses, might see beauty in a colour never before seen. Here before me was a kind of entity I had never believed possible, taking the form of a brother legionary. What legion or chapter had sired him, I could not say. His armour was of a mark unknown to me then, not even matching the newer suits of Aquila-pattern battle-plate I had seen aboard the Black Templar's vessel. "We have encountered one of them ourselves," I said to Ashokai. Daravek's warriors brandished their weapons at this newcomer. We did not.
"Name yourself,"
Daravek demanded. I could see his knuckles tight on the haft of his axe. The grey warrior turned his helmed head to each group in turn, showing no favour either way. The voice that emerged from his helmet grill was deep, though not unusually so for a legionary, and his words were preceded by a click of vox projection, just as any of our voices were.
"I am Sauronos."
Within his words I heard the telltale flow of respiration. He was dead to my sixth sense, yet alive to all others. My fascination deepened. Had he been one of us before undergoing these changes? Was he still one of us, but with mutations of the soul that set him apart? The icon on his pauldron was not one I recognised, but it was nevertheless gravid with symbolism. Two skulls set within an eight-spiked disc, one looking to the left, the other to the right. An inscription ringed the staring skulls, cast in dark silver and written in an unfamiliar dialect of High Gothic. In abisso tollamus animabus damnatus. The exact translation evaded me, but I could make out its meaning. We bear the souls of the damned through the depths.
"I am Taker Starovic," declared our rival.
He strode forwards, confronting the newcomer.
"We are aware of what you name yourself," said the grey warrior. "You speak irrelevancies."
"How did you reach us undetected?" asked Daravek. "How have your men boarded our ships?"
Sauronos kept his gaze steady.
"You speak irrelevancies."
"Then what of your warband?"
Daravek pressed.
"Where do your loyalties lie?"
"You speak irrelevancies."
I do not know if Abaddon sensed something about the newcomer that I could not, or if he simply made the intuitive connection first, but he addressed the grey warrior, cutting past Daravek's useless questions.
"Will you guide us out of this storm?"
The grey warrior's armour joints purred as he looked between the two leaders.
"Yes, Ezekiel Abaddon, we will, if you meet our price."
For a time, I watched through Ashokai's eyes. I bore witness to his memories, seeing the spectral warships coalesce into being. They took shape on the oculus, at first ghostly and indistinct, becoming the same pale grey-green as Sauronos's armour as they drifted nearer. Imperial ships, but built to patterns I did not recognise. They possessed enough familiar elements to suggest they had been brought into being by standard template construct plans, but not by any that were in use during my years fighting for the Imperium. Like the Black Templar's vessel, these warships were newer than those we sailed aboard. The anamnesis reached out through her amniotic fluid, her hands curling as though she was strangling the closest vessel. I felt every turret and forward cannon along the vengeful spirit's hull grinding around to lock on to the far smaller ship. That was when the Grey Warrior manifested before the several hundred primary bridge crew, coming into being the way Saranos had appeared before us. This warrior wore the same armor and showed the same symbol, though whereas Saranos conversed, this one remained perfectly silent. Warriors, beastmen, and Ultio's mind-slaved cyborgs and robots all converged upon the figure where he stood by Abaddon's empty throne. He still made no move. All of this I took from Ashokai's mind. I took it and relayed it back to Abaddon.
"Tell Ashokai to maintain a vigil," he commanded, "but make no hostile move."
"Ezekiel orders you to maintain a vigil, but make no hostile move."
"As he wishes," came the reply. "The warrior with you. He speaks."
"He does. He speaks of prices to be paid to guide us from the storm." I felt a stab of irritation from Ashokai. To be so far away from such a fascinating occurrence, it galled him. It galled him deeply. Saranos named his chapter, though each of us heard something different in curiously structured High Gothic. Iliaster heard Infernum Doctoriae, the Underworld's Guides, and Ezekiel heard Umbra Laura, the Ghosts of the Shadows. When Saranos spoke the name, I heard him say Categis Lemura, the Storm's Spirits. Later, when we heard others speak of the Grey Warriors, we would piece together a rough Low Gothic approximation of their name, the Warp Ghosts. Saranos told us of his chapter's purpose, that he and his kindred were ferrymen of a kind, guiding vessels through the warp. They would, for a price, guide one of our fleets through the storm and into the narrow channel of calm space that speared through the Great Eye and led to the Cadian system. He swore in those ceaselessly calm tones that his brothers were born of no legion, yet told us we spoke irrelevances every time we asked how that was possible. He said the same when asked the year of his birth or the patterns and classes of his small fleet's unknown vessels. Never did he display a loss of patience, nor appear to favour one warlord over the other.
"I do not trust these ghosts of the warp," Telemachon murmured,
giving the name he had heard Saranos speak. None of us did, but what choice did we have? Daravek, meanwhile, spat at the idea of negotiating with the Grey Warrior.
"What are your demands, Spectre?"
"We demand nothing," said Saranos.
"Then what is your price to free us from your storm?"
"It is not our storm. And the price for guidance out of these tides is for you to discern. You will be judged by what you sacrifice."
Daravek spat at the idea.
"And if we kill you now, if we destroy your fleet?"
"Then we would die. You speak irrelevances."
"How can we trust your word in any of this?"
"Nothing I say will alter that choice. You speak irrelevances, Takus Daravek."
"Very well."
The Death Guard warlord rested his axe on one shoulder, speaking with a confident grin that hid little of his fury.
"Here is my offer, ghost."
"We are listening," said the Grey Warrior.
"If you require ships for your fleet, I will give them to you. 10, 20, if need be, from my war spoil. I will tear them from the Black Legion and lay them at your feet. If you desire slaves, I will grant you 1,000,000 of them from the holds of Black Legion vessels. More, if that is not enough. 2,000,000, 3,000,000. If you want access to my demon forges or armament manufactories, it can be arranged. And once I claim what is mine by right, if you wish my favor in the future, then it will be yours without question."
Blood of the Changer, the sheer magnitude of that offer. Most warbands would risk destroying one another over even one of those elements, let alone all of them. The right to use a powerful warband's forges and manufactories was the kind of opportunity many warlords never saw in the entirety of their lives. Daravek offered lifelong riches for any warband, and he did so with the arrogant generosity of a king laughing while scattering gold coins onto the street for peasants to fight over. Much of it was not his to offer. The ships and slaves he spoke of were still ours for now, but they could so easily become his if this deadlock escalated into war. Nothing he said was beyond the realm of possibility, and most valuable of all was his favour. The regard and support of a warlord with Daravek's influence was enough to inspire any warband to acts of madness. Such patrons were rare indeed. At my side, I heard Iliaster exhale the same awed sigh at the wealth and opportunity being offered so royally. But Daravek was not yet done.
"And," he added through clenched black teeth, "if it is souls you desire, then I offer you the souls of Ezekiel Abaddon and his miserable Ezekarian. Ask, and they are yours. I will harvest them with my own blade, one by one, when our fleets do battle."
Saranos inclined his head, acknowledging Daravek's words before turning to Abaddon.
"We have heard the offer made by Tagus Daravek of the Legion Host. What do you offer, Ezekiel Abaddon of the Black Legion?"
My lord did not answer Saranos at once. He requested a moment to speak with his brothers, and turned to the three of us, his gaze raking over us in turn.
"I think back to Mariana's words," he said softly, "that greatness requires sacrifice, that one cannot run from what must be done. As much as I doubt her ultimate loyalty to us, and as much as I distrust her adamant beliefs, there is a cold truth to what she said. She saw this moment, not the souls gathered here, nor the offers that would be made, but she knew the time was coming when a great offer would need to be made. And now here we are, with her words echoing through my skull. The necessity of sacrifice."
He gestured to me, indicating my arm.
"You showed it yourself, Kaon, this very night, sacrificing your arm, suffering a grievous loss to win an even greater victory. Without that loss, you would have died. How many myths and legends all grow from the same seeds? A multitude of tales preach that sacrifice is at the root of epochal progress. How many warriors throughout history have laid down their lives so that their nations would survive?"
For the first time in years, he looked at peace, as if the decision he was making was a fight back against the pressures upon his soul.
"If you wish to beseech the god of war, you kill in his name and risk your own death. If a warrior wishes to join our newborn legion, he is forced to balance individual glory and personal freedom with the cause we all share. He battles beneath my banner, as well as his own. He carves the icons of his former life from his battle plate, and he stains his ceramite black. Sacrifice is all. Sacrifice is made for greater gain."
Abaddon hesitated, no longer looking at Telemachon or Iliaster, only at me.
"A sacrifice is only meaningful if one surrenders something precious."
"You are a ritualist, Iskandar, a sorcerer, a philosopher. Is that not the truth of it?" I thought of my father Magnus and his ritual to send word to the Emperor. The many apprentices and cultists that lay dead on desecrated altars, even before we were rendered excommunicate traitoris. It had worked, though with devastating consequences. I thought of Araman, my courageous, foolish, beloved, hated brother Araman, and the rubric he wove that destroyed our legion. He had sacrificed nothing of true worth. He believed in himself above all else, and he had been punished for his flawed attempt to cheat the changer of the ways. I thought of the sacrifices I had made down the many years as part of rituals, summonings, bindings. So many of them had involved blood and death, and the most powerful always demanded the most intimate of sacrifices. One did not deal with demons without making sacrifices to them. The slaughter of a stranger holds almost no power, no emotional resonance.
the butchering of a close brother, betraying his trust, is an act that sings out across the warp. By its nature, I finally replied, a sacrifice must cost the giver, otherwise it is merely an offering. True sacrifices are fueled by such depth of emotion that they echo into unreality. They are the offers that the warp hears, and the ones it most often answers.
They are the offers that history hears, brother.
Abaddon was smiling now, though there was no humor upon his visage. He turned from us, walking towards Saranos. The grey warrior had not moved at all.
What do you offer, Ezekiel Abaddon?
Abaddon spoke his offer. It took far less time than Daravik's many promises and was done before I could stop him. I would have tried. I told myself that afterwards, and I have maintained it through all the years and wars since. Had I known what he would offer, I would have tried to stop him. Instead he spoke just a single sentence, and I had no time to do anything but stare in shock. As soon as he had spoken, other warriors in the same grey-green as Saranos drifted from the shadows and from the air itself, striding forwards and taking form, 10 of them, 20, 50. They levelled their bolters at Daravek and his officers.
"Return to your vessels," Saranos ordered Daravek's men. "Your offer has been refused."
Pus ran from Daravek's eyes in creamy mimicry of Fury's tears. It took me a moment to realize there were maggots hatching within his skull and spilling from his tear ducts.
"You have made a grievous mistake,"
he warned Saranos and the grey warriors. Saranos's only reply was to draw his blade, a slow and stoic threat. Wisely, they left without bloodshed. I doubted we had long before Daravek's armada attacked, and we made ready to return to the vengeful spirit. For there, we would offer up our sacrifice.